if you've got a real desire in your heart that won't leave, that's that thing put in you from probably the very beginning of your life, and you're equipped to do it, but it doesn't mean you need to share it with everybody because everybody really doesn't understand it.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Welcome back, 18 Summers Tribe. I am here with a familiar face, Henry Penix. Hopefully you guys remember him. I'm super excited to have him here today, especially with the topic we're going to be going over. Henry was a young entrepreneur, which is something that a lot of our tribe has their children strive for, or their children are striving for. We're going to talk about that today. He built a tech company that was featured on Shark Tank, over 300 employees, now is business consultant to many big businesses. And we really enjoyed our chat last time, where I wanted to make sure we brought him back today to talk about childhood entrepreneurship and how do we start that path a healthy, vital way with our kids. Henry, welcome back. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. It's very sparse that I get to actually have a conversation with a really super cool dude like you.
Thank you. Ditto. Well, you have a history that I think is going to help our tribe, because a lot of people are wanting to see their children to go into entrepreneurship. And I think that you want to inspire that, not force that. And since you are such a natural entrepreneur, I'd love you to tell your story about getting into childhood entrepreneurship. You know, tell us the story. What was it? What did you do? And how did that kind of help you in your adult life, you know, with the bigger 300 plus person employee company that you built, you know, and kind of do's and don'ts of parents? I'd love to just sit here and listen, because I know this is intriguing to a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I'd love to do that. I went from a point in my life where I couldn't afford $120 worth of wedding rings. I had to put them on a 12-month charge, all the way to retiring when I was 35 years old, right before my 36th birthday. And that ride was a ride that was instilled in me from an early childhood. I remember when I was probably 5-6 years old, we were driving down a street in my hometown, and I asked my mom, I said, "Mom, you know, what are those big dog statues next to those doors?" And she said, "Oh, honey, those are for the rich people." And so immediately in my mind, I drew a distinction between us and them. You know, there was always us and them. It wasn't all of us. It wasn't like we weren't good enough. And I asked her, you know, why couldn't we have those? And she said, "Well, that's just for the rich people." And we weren't poor, you know, like my dad worked 3 jobs, bringing us all up, and my mom, you know, she was a stay-at-home mom and all of that. It instilled some good moral fabric in our character. I just got one younger sister. But that point in time, because I've been asked this before, what really kind of stuck with me and pushed me into entrepreneurialism. So from that point, you know, I always wanted to be more, and I always wanted to know what rich people were like. So you know, that grew into, I guess I was 8-9 years old, and when I could push a lawnmower, I got out there and I would mow our yard, and then I would ask my neighbors, you know, could I mow your yard? And then it expanded to 2 more neighbors. I mowed their yard. I did the weed eating. I did, you know, everything. And when I got to about 5 or 6 yards, and I was probably now, you know, 12, 14 years old, I would do this every year. I started thinking, you know, I've got some buddies who aren't working, and why aren't they working? Why are they just sitting at home? Why are they, you know, like this is kind of fun to go out and accomplish a task and get paid. And I've got my own money to spend on what I want. I opened my first checking account when I was like 8 years old, or savings account when I was like 8 years old. To this day, I still have that account, Jim, and it's a 4-digit account number. And there have been tens of millions run through it.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
The same account, the actual first account you opened at that age.
Yeah. So
has the bank changed hands many a times?
Well, it did early on, but it's now owned by the Kaisers, which, you know, he was on Forbes, I think top 10 billionaires or whatever, and just donated like $400 million to a park in our city. So it, you know, it's been kind of a staple. But anyway, as I'm saying this, I'm thinking, okay, the guy who I just had on last week who taught me about hacking, now there's somebody listening going, okay, let me get that bank. Let me get
that. Isn't that funny?
But anyway, I started mowing yards and I wondered why my buddies weren't mowing yards or doing something, because I'm paying for everything now. I'm getting us into, you know, we used to pay like $1 to get into the swim park and all this and that. And so I thought, you know, I'm charging, at that time I was charging like maybe $20, $18, $20 to mow a yard front and back, weed eat it, you know, do it perfect. And minimum wage was like $4 or $5. So I would hire guys at $7 or $8, make $18 to $20 and scale.
Wow.
So I had them out working. I was working.
You had no training in that. You had no books, nothing read. That was just a natural kind of intuition.
No. I always just thought, you know, I'm very curious anyway by nature, and that's gotten me in some trouble over the years, but it's also helped me a lot. But I'm always curious, and I've always wanted to help people. You know, starting out, I was doing my yard, and I would have my mom or dad drive me over to my grandmother's yard. I would do her yard because it helped her. And she said, well, you know, here, honey, here's a 10 and a Pepsi. She would give me a Pepsi every time I would finish it. And I thought, well, you know, this is value. This is some value. And I could take that $10 and spend it. So I wonder if other people would have that same need. And I wasn't, I think from especially my mom and my dad, but especially my mom encouraging me when I was young, and this will relate with your tribe, she would always tell me, you know, Henry, you can do anything. You know, we came from a Christian family, and in the Bible it says, I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. And, you know, my father was a pastor, and they instilled that in me, that I could literally do anything and be anybody and become anything that I wanted. So that gave me the confidence, Jim, to go up to my next door neighbor and ask, you know, you may be mowing your yard now, but watch me mow it. You know, let me mow it just once. And if you don't like it, I don't have to come back. But if you do like it, you know, pay me what you think it's worth. Like, I think that was my pitch, you know, and in a roundabout way. And they started paying me, you know, $20 here, $20 there. I had 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 yards and was really starting to make a lot of money. So much so that I was able to buy my first motorcycle cash when I was 14 and a half. I started riding my motorcycle, and I already knew about engines and things from mowing lawns so long. And, you know, it just all kind of worked out. So, you know, at the very beginning, me being encouraged and given the confidence from my mom to really become better, I think set me on a course to success.
And you were curious. It sounds like curiosity was a big thing too. Hey, why are those statues over there? Well, why can't I have that? Well, what does it look like? Well, why? It was a curiosity that you just kind of ran.
What did I ask you our first interview that kind of threw you off that I noticed in your room?
Oh, it was the surfboard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I go, Jim, what's that? Like, I want to know, you know?
And, yeah. It's like,
and it was the best story I've ever heard, dude. Like, I love curiosity and I love finding out.
Yeah. And I think curiosity is such a good word. And we've talked about that in different entrepreneur circles. I think it doesn't sound like your parents, you were curious, which creates a whole different energy source. And like you said, your mom instilled the values and the confidence. But curiosity is important. What I've seen, Henry, which I think you and I might have talked about, I've seen some parents try to force their kids into a corner of entrepreneurship. You need to do this. And it doesn't sound like that's what your parents did. It was kind of an open gate. And you decided which way to walk and which way to go. But I've seen a stifling of parents trying to say, you're going to build a YouTube channel. You're going to do this. You're going to... Yeah. And it seems very forced. And do you think that would have served you back in the day if your parents said, you have to do a lawn business? Without a point of curiosity.
No, because out of my curiosity, I'm also a little rebellious. And if they would have told me to do that, I probably would have. My sister is exactly opposite of me. She wouldn't have done that. But I probably would have. And I think knowing what kind of kid you have, you know, like there's a difference between motivation and forcing somebody. So
yeah,
I was never forced to do anything specifically because I think they knew what kind of a guy I was, but I was motivated. How was I motivated? They said, well, we're not going to buy you a cycle or we're not going to pay for this for you. But these are some ways you can make money, you know, and they really didn't even tell me the ways to make money. They just set up the environment where if I wanted it, I needed to pay for it. They made a long-term goal for me when I was very young that they would match dollar for dollar everything I saved for a new car. And I thought, okay, if I save 100, you're going to give me 200. Yes. If I save 1,000, you're going to give me 2,000. Yes. If I save 5,000, you're going to give me 5,000. I didn't think they actually thought I was going to save that much, but I saved enough to buy a brand new Smokey and the Bandit Trans Am. On my 16th. I mean, dude, I like had lofty goals and, you know, I love that. So the difference between motivation and, you know, inspiration and forcing you are two different things. I think, and as you know, I speak at different conferences around the world and I get a lot of this as well. And this is, you know, again, I grew up as a pastor's kid, so I'm going to tell you a little Bible verse here.
Sure.
But it says in the Bible that, you know, that if God gives us the desires of our heart. And that word desire comes from the Latin root word sire. And sire means of the Father. So when our Father, God, gives us that desire of our heart, He also gives us the things that we need to you know, complete that desire. Now, that desire is for me. It's not for you. It's not for my parents. It's not for my friends. I tell people today, if you've got a desire in your heart and it just won't leave, you know, it's not a whim. It's not because you saw a cool movie and you're copying it or whatever. But if you've got a real desire in your heart that won't leave, that's that thing put in you from probably the very beginning of your life and you're equipped to do it. But it doesn't mean you need to share it with everybody because everybody really doesn't understand it. So if I've got a desire to be a painter and you're my dad and you say, Henry, you know, you need to be a football player because I was a football player. That's not my desire and it's never going to work. I'm going to be a crappy football player, but a great painter. So I think recognizing that in the kids' lives and knowing kind of how to lead them and guide them and knowing that every kid is kind of born with certain desires in their heart, you know, like early on, every kid wants to be a policeman, a fireman, a doctor, a nurse, whatever, because it's just that whim. But as they get older and start becoming more special at different things than others, it's up to the parents to recognize that. And if little Johnny is athletic and he can catch a football with his eyes closed, then you probably ought to get behind him in athletics. If Johnny number two, if they hate athletics and they love painting or they can play a guitar by ear by picking it up. Take those hints and don't try to cram them into what you think they should be just because maybe you did it. You know, how many second generation business owners fail because their parents try to push that on? Well, I did it. It was successful for me and you can do the same thing. Well, you could, but should you, you know? So then you've got to come back and look at the kid's sort of background and say, what does he aspire to? What is he naturally gifted at? What would really benefit him? Put down your own ego and let the kid be what he wants to be.
Yeah, and I think that you just hit the nail on the head of one of the things that I've seen, I think, within myself, within tons of families and parents we've worked with. Putting down your own ego is tough. And sometimes you don't even see it as ego. You see it as protection or wanting the best for them. But as we talk, it's a stifling. If you don't adhere to the clues, and they really do leave clues, don't I mean, there are clues that are clear as day. I'm sure you were leaving clues. I know I left clues. And if we try to force them to go the opposite direction, I can see it as one of the most debilitating things that can happen if you ignore the clues and make them go forced into another direction. And it really is that ego where we have to say, for example, I think we talked about this last time. My son has been in the Florida Keys this last week. He wants to own his own charter fishing business. A friend of ours from one of our retreats, his son's in his early 20s, makes six figures a year, and it's growing, loves it. He says, well, if I was off today, I'd be fishing. This is what I love to do, or I'd be
starting. Exactly.
So he's 16, and he's down there training. Now, Henry, I like to fish, but I'm not a good fisherman. I'm a pretty good surfer, but I couldn't have shown him this.
Right.
But I let him go deep into it, and it was my good buddy whose son is already doing this. He said, you know, at first there's that little twinge where he had, you know, nice prestigious schools and this and that. I don't really care. He's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, is it bad to say my son's a fisherman? Absolutely not. I'm so proud of it now. He's happy. He's making a lot of money. He's now training your son. He's investing in real estate on the side on his own accord, you know, and there is a letting go that had I not had people over me or advice like this, I don't think I would have had the courage to do it. I would have said, oh, you have to do this. You have to follow this path. You have to do that. That's a silly thing. What are you going to, you're just going to fish? That just sounds, so this is a really basic example, but yeah. It really speaks true to springboards.
Yeah, parents are role models and you have so much control over your children. You have to watch how you yield that and wield that control. In any business, there's certain tenets. There's certain basic tenets. You were a great surfer, and I'm just going to guess, but you probably enjoyed talking to other surfers. You got around other people who did what you like to do. You may have read books. You may have watched surf movies. You got into it. You may have wanted the best clothes or at least surfing clothes. You wanted your hairstyle like a surfer. You know, like everything about surfing just permeated from you. And my point is this, if your son wants to charter, you know, be a charter fishing person or run a charter fishing boat or whatever that is in the Keys, you don't have to ignore him and you don't have to intimidate him or try to be sarcastic and say, what are you doing? You're never going to make it. I'm a great surfer. Why wouldn't you want to surf? Why wouldn't you want to make money? You could do this. So, but what you can do, Jim, and what you should do, and I know you've already done this. This is just our example. What you can do and what you should do is teach him the tenets that you learned becoming a good surfer only applied in his passion, which is fishing. So, hey man, who do you know? Just like you said, he's got a buddy down there. Who do you know that's successful in that? Read books on it. What would you be doing on your day off? I'd be fishing. Well, dude, I know that's your passion. And since that's your passion, I'm behind you 1,000% because I know you're going to flourish above and beyond anything that I could ever imagine doing. And unless you become greater than me, then I've failed. You know, yeah. Like give them that just go. But you see what I'm saying? You can take what you do to become a great surfer, apply it to his desire and encourage him and not put him down just because you may not understand it.
Exactly. Yeah. Staying that openness has been key. And I'll tell you, what you just said gives me more inspiration to keep going the direction we are. Like, as I think I told you, you know, I have a real estate investment company. I have had that for over 20 years, done a lot of properties. So the classic buying a house, renovating and selling it, he's watched me do that tons of times. Now, I've always said, Henry, I don't care if any of you guys go into this business. I don't want you in it. I don't need you in it. I'll show you the things. You can follow along. But there has been absolutely zero pressure to ever enter or do that. I said, I'll teach you it if you want to learn about it. And he started to come. Well, just a few months ago, I won't tell the whole story now for saving of time, but he got a boat from his buddy for $200. He put $300 into it and he sold it for $1,800. And I said, he flipped the boat. And I said, holy cow. I said, yeah, but if I had put in the bigger motor, Dad, I would have been able to sell it for a little over $3,000. It would only have cost me $350, $400 more for the bigger motor. He's onto his second boat. And I'm like, I said, if I had tried to stifle you, he couldn't understand why I was so excited. I said, do you see what you're doing? You're staying within your sphere of expertise, of where you want to be, what you want to do. You're learning, taking some of the principles, kind of like you were just saying, to try to adhere, and he's doing it. I said, I could have never told you. I don't know how to flip a boat. I don't know how to fix a boat. I don't know how to find a cheap boat. And so it was really exciting to see these things going.
Now, those are those basic tenets that you learn that could be applied in any endeavor. And your kids, especially, I've got three kids myself, but your kids will especially watch what you do 1,000 times more than they hear what you say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you're out doing that, Jim, and you're flipping houses and they're seeing you be successful, that's what sticks. It's not as much as what you say, but as what you do. If you're encouraging them, if you're, you know, bringing them along, I would always have my kids in my technology company. You know, we wound up taking that all around the world. We were in Apple stores, Best Buy stores. We had over 1 billion media impressions. I mean, just top won the CES Best of Innovation Awards against Samsung, Sony, Hitachi, all these companies. And in that company, I had my son who's very, very intelligent. And I would put him in different groups where he could excel. He did great at computers when he was small. Now, listen to this. When he was small, when he wanted a computer, I didn't buy him the computer. I bought him the parts for a computer. And I said, let's put it together.
Oh, I love it.
Computer, here's the hard drive. Here's the power source. And I wasn't that technologically gifted, but remember, I'm curious. So I thought, we can put this together. We can bring this in. We can get this done. I would take him on hikes, Jim. There's a little park here that is a mountain, really cool mountain, small mountain range. In Tulsa, there's hardly no mountains, but small little mountain. We would hike in there, you know, 20 minutes or so, and I would stop. And I said, Zach, now you lead us out. And he goes, Dad, I'm not for sure of the direction. I said, it's okay, I'm following you. And a couple times he would cry. I mean, not bad. He would just get kind of upset, and I'm not for sure. I said, dude, you can make it. I know you can get us out of here. And he would lead us out, and we would find the path. So I taught him early on how to get out of those things with me there behind him as support. I taught him how, when he wants something, he could put it together. And I got him involved in technology because I could see the future going, you know, to more technology. But I wanted him to know how the guts of it, how to put it together. He went from there to fixing people's computer problems that technicians that had already graduated college couldn't fix. And he's 12, wow. 13. I mean, crazy stuff. So in my technology company, you know, now he's 18, 19, 20. And he's over a part of, you know, that. One of his last deals at the technology company was pitched this huge thing we came up with to Verizon. And he flew down with one of my top sales guys and they pitched it. But listen, I don't like nepotism. So I wouldn't have promoted him unless he really had what it took to get the job done. But I wasn't afraid to give him the opportunity to fail. Never be afraid to give your kid the opportunity to fail. And they will fail. Advice. I've failed 40 times, but I've got up 41 times.
Yep.
And that 41st time is where I killed it. So don't be afraid to let your kids fail. Support them when they're young. Give them little lessons. Take them on little things where they can figure out things, where it brings their curiosity. Take them on hikes. Let them lead you out. Let them put together things instead of just the only guy who's ever been my mentor, and I'll shut up and let you talk.
I want to hear this.
A guy named Paul J. Meyer. When he died, he had over $3 billion in the bank, international company. This is a very long story. I won't tell you how we met, but basically I never took a dollar from him. I said, Paul, if you'll just talk, I'll listen. We became best friends. I was by his side. He introduced me to people that I would never got to meet. But he started out as this, you know, poor German kid, and his father would never buy him a bicycle. And this is before, you know, this is already after I raised my kids. I met this guy. I met him later on in life. But he said, Henry, when I was a kid, a poor German kid, he goes, my father would take me to the salvage yard and we would find bicycle parts. He wouldn't even buy the parts for me. We would go find salvage parts and he would make me put together my own bicycles. And I started putting them together. I started liking it. And then I started riding them. And then kids asked me where I got that bike and I started selling them. He took that into a motivational course. He took it into real estate. He took it into three or four of his endeavors. He owns jet companies, restaurants, speedways, all this stuff. Every time I got cocky and developed something, I would send him an email. I said, Paul, I just, you know, developed these schools and, you know, we just did this for 2 million and 3 million and 5 million. And I think my valuation's up to 10 million now. And he goes, yeah, we just put in 500 units at the, you know, at Turtle Creek in Dallas. And, you know, we're at about 150 million on that. And I'm like, dang, I want to go, you know, I want to go higher. I want to, and that was encouraging to me. So that I've seen that line of thinking, how you deal with your kids early on, never spoil them. A few years ago, I moved into a 10,000 square foot house. It was my dream home, a jogging track around it, a fish pond in the back. I mean, all gated, secured, all this stuff. And even at that, where my kids didn't have to do anything ever, I was on 35 acres. I made them all mow the yard. They would weed eat. They didn't get the weed eat done where they left grass hanging over on the sidewalk. I wouldn't pay them. I would say, you go fix that first, blow it off. I want it, you know, perfect. And they would do it when we needed a fence painted. They would go out 18, 20 hours and paint a fence over a course of days. I'm not a slave driver. but they would go out and paint the fence. Did I have the money to do it? Yes. Should I have paid it for it done? No. Should I have trained my kids like that? Absolutely.
I love it. I say, look, you're part of a team. We're a family. We're part of a team. Just because we can afford to have someone do this or do that part of the yard work or, you know, move the rocks for the pool we're putting in, you're gonna do it. You're gonna get out there and sweat the brow. And I think it's amazing how you said there's almost simple principles. And that one principle that your mentor who went from nothing to billions, you know, you that went to huge success, and now you're, there is no chance, Henry, I'm going to say 0% chance that your son could have gone down for a pitch with Verizon, held his own, really stepped into the position and made it happen had you said, okay, Henry, you sit here. I'm going to put you in bubble wrap. Don't say anything. Here's a pacifier. Yeah. I'm going to line up all this stuff for you to do. Here's the computer. I'll type the fingers for you. I think you know where I'm going with this. You allowed him to be messy. You allowed him to find his own direction, have to take initiatives and to have little failures to figure things out. And it's just such a simple principle, but it's not always practiced, at least from what I've seen. I don't know.
Again, it takes putting down your ego as a parent. You know, when you had your kids, it didn't come with an instruction manual, so you don't know everything. You know, knowing that you don't know everything is a start. But giving them support and those little words of encouragement, you know, like you don't know how powerful your words are. If you come home from a hard day at work and you're pissed off at the world and your kid has done something bad or messed something up, watch how you handle that because you're forming the rest of their lives.
Yeah. You're setting the leadership tone, aren't you? You really do. We talked about that, especially through the pandemic. There's a leadership tone and you set it for the better or for the worse. And like you said, actions are going to be followed over words every time, every time.
Yep,
so, 100%. Well, I could talk about this all day. And I think that, you know, the whole goal was let's talk about what started you, do's and don'ts, and how are you implying that into your children? And I love what you're doing where you're letting them be messy, letting them be creative. There's not nepotism. Hey, you might fail. But he didn't just all of a sudden walk into the office and say, hey, you're going to go on a pitch for Verizon. I mean, that was years of proof. And that's the same thing I've done with some speaking stuff and other events that we run. But let's give the folks starting today, they want their children to have these principles instilled. They're really interested. What would you say the absolute starting point to get their children to start to be messy and to start, whether it's flipping boats or, you know, using their tech skills to be able to put a product to variety. Like, what is the starting point? Let's go first step. Let's get it down to that, Henry. What advice would you give?
Yeah, I think first, Jim, you have to be aware of who your child is. And you might say, well, I raised the kid from infancy. I know who my child is. But have you been seeing, have you been looking? And when you're looking, have you really been seeing? When you've listened, have you really heard? Just right there. Just listen, watch, observe, and hear your child. Figure out what they're great at, what they enjoy, what their passions are, what their tendencies are. And that's got to be first, because on any roadmap to get to any destination, you've got to know where you're starting from. And if you don't know where you're starting from, it's like being out on a basketball court with no goals. You're going to dribble all your life. But if you know where you're starting from and what you have to work with, know where you want to go to, then you can get there. So the very first step is being aware of your child. Look at your child against the backdrop of the rest of their life. You know, what is this child leaning toward? What do they enjoy? What are their tendencies? Do they get mad? Are they curious, like Henry was, or are they more follow the leader, you know, like Henry's sister? And that's just not a bad choice there. Like, both are great, but they're different. So you have to manage them different. So being aware of that, Jim, I think is the very first step.
I love that. And I think you pointed on something. Not being an entrepreneur is okay. I've had to explain that so many times to different parents at our retreats and workshops that's okay. They can be entrepreneurial within their own right of being a part of a team or being a part of that. But again, let their tendencies lead, not your own wishes. Yes. And it's okay whether they want to go full on entrepreneurial or not. Yep. But if you let them lead, that's what's the overall goal is happiness, success, prosperity. The odds are better if we let them lead with their tendencies, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, because you never know. I mean, even me being an entrepreneur, I still on occasions had to get a job, you know, like I, yeah. right out of college, I thought I was king daddy, and I got a job at a men's clothing store because I wanted to build my wardrobe to get to a Fortune 500 corporation. You know, I thought, hey, I've done all this. Now I want to go to the top in this field. And every step that I made, even working, Jim, gave me the confidence and gave me the training for my next step. When I was in that place selling men's clothing, they asked me to represent women's makeup line. Women's makeup line, me. I'm out of college. I'm an athlete. I'm like, yeah, I'm an athlete. I'm thinking, no, I don't do that. But I did it for like 6 months. I was very good at it. They featured me in the newspaper in my city, blah, blah, blah. My next company were schools, and I had over 300 employees, and 299 were women. Oh, wow. So I learned kind of how to, you know what I mean? Like
I was about to say, yeah, there was a development there for sure that came out of that.
Well, every step you take is for a reason. And selling clothes, you know, got me familiar with the public. Representing a women's makeup line got me familiar with dealing with different types of women and ages of women. And that's exactly what took me into, you know, my schools when I had, you know, 300 employees. And so any area the kid wants to go, just encourage them. And what you said at the beginning of the show, you know, step two would be never put what you do on them. Like never try to force what you've done on them, or just because you have a goal for them doesn't mean it's going to be their goal for them. Yes, it'll never stay. They may get into it for a little bit, but it's ultimately going to fall and fail if it's not their goal and their passion. Again, you can encourage them just like you did. You can encourage him, watch me flip these houses. And then that he applies it to what he loves to do, which was boats. You like houses, he likes boats. You encouraged him. You know, you can do that, but never force exactly what you're doing on your kids.
No. Well said. Well said. Never force what you're doing on your kids. I don't think we want to end on anything but that, because that's something that we all need to take home to heart. I continue to work on, and sometimes we do it unconsciously. I think we're all guilty of that. And as you said, that awareness, like check back in with yourself and saying, wait a minute, is this on my agenda or on theirs? Yeah. And just that self-reflection, you know, the overall goal is let's have our kids have it better off than we did. And let's not do the push-ups for them, because we take away such an honor and an enjoyment if we do that. So
that's beautifully said. Beautifully said.
Henry, I could talk to you all day. I love how you love my board story. It's great to reconnect. I'm sure we'll get back on another call and interview again. We keep swapping things back and forth. And I really appreciate you, you know, stepping out to talk to our 18 Summers Tribe, because this is something weighing on a lot of people and they want to see it happen. And I think the advice you gave today is going to really help with that.
Oh, thank you so much. It was an honor. And anytime, I'd love to speak with you about any topic.
We will. We'll be back, Henry. It's great seeing you again, buddy.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.